Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. MyRunCatalina.com. We got the Catalina Eco Marathon Half Marathon 10K coming up Saturday, November 18th. VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shops. ATV Swim Spas, official training vessel for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've now raised over $80 million and sent out over 18,000 grants to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, kind enough to come in studio early in the morning. He's celebrity chef, Mr. Richard Blaze, also a New York City marathon runner who's done that. I think you've done five?
This will be my fifth.
All right.
Signed up for six, but there was the storm that year.
Yes.
So this will be my fifth official.
Richard, thanks so much for coming
in. Oh, my gosh. Thank you for having me. I don't feel like I'm worthy to be sitting in this chair.
Come on,
across
now.
From you. You usually
five marathons.
Real athletes in here. Five marathons, which is, it is kind of tough to go back and think that I've actually run one. But, yeah, this will be my fifth.
So, grew up in New York?
Grew up on Long Island in New York and, trained sort of all around the country and a little bit around the world, but I've settled here in Southern California for the last 5 years.
So, in New York,
growing
up, did you have some sports that you loved?
Oh, I mean, I was a big sports, so like junior high, high school, little league, all of that sort of thing. I would play, four sports a year. I would play lacrosse and baseball. Our teams were so bad that they would Deion Sanders me from one pitch to the other. So I'd play a lacrosse game and a baseball game in the same season. I wrestled. I was a horrible wrestler, although wrestling taught me a lot.
It does.
And I played some football as well.
Teaches you how to sweat under really big guys.
I was the worst wrestler. I mean, I'm a pretty bad runner, but I was the worst wrestler ever. I would just get wedgies every match. I'd get pinned in 11 to 15 seconds. I wrestled at a horrible weight class of 145, which is like big boys usually.
Oh, yeah.
Because I couldn't make weight. I would, I'm a chef now, so obviously I had those genes, and I would just eat pizza the night before a match, and it doesn't work when you're a wrestler.
Well, and speaking of that, so you, in New York, start out at McDonald's, right?
Yeah, exactly right. So like, not only am I a horrible wrestler, but I'm working at McDonald's, and where my benefit is a 20-piece chicken nugget at the end of a night.
And a Big Mac to go.
Probably, yeah, exactly, yes.
And now, were you cooking there?
I was. I had a very prestigious position at McDonald's. I was the poissonnier, which means fish cook in French, which at a fast food hamburger restaurant that arguably serves one seafood item.
Exactly.
And I remember the first batch of filet of fish I sent out, I forgot to put the top buns.
Yes.
So I was being avant-garde well before I knew that was actually my calling.
This is the way it should be.
I guess so. Yeah, the drive-thru was backed up. It was not a good beginning for me. And actually, I think my first day I was a cashier. But I think there was a girl who came in I had a crush on, and I just couldn't even, speak. And
yes.
I was like, I need to be in the kitchen. I'm just not equipped to be looking at people eye to eye.
When did you realize that you wanted to be a chef, that this was your calling?
I think, again, years later, going through traditional college and sort of just having cooking as being, a part-time job, I was working at a steakhouse, and I noticed that some of the chefs would come in with their names on their jackets, and it was because they went to the Culinary Institute of America. And I just started realizing that it was not just a job or a craft, but that there was also a little bit of art to it.
Yes.
And I kind of consider myself an artist, and that's when I fell in love with it. And just like everyone else who gets obsessed with things, I would work all day long and then go home and actually watch, I'm dating myself here, but I'd watch VCR tapes of Julia Child, whatever I could find, any information. This is pre-internet. And I just sort of dove into books and just got obsessed.
Who was the most impactful on your career as a chef?
I don't really have a true mentor. I mean, certainly chefs I worked for, Thomas Keller, Danielle Ballou, those are the big names. I really think, though, that the impact was just that sort of drive to want to make people happy, which is a weird thing, I guess, to say. But I think a lot of cooks, myself especially, we came up in a dysfunctional sort of family. The kitchen becomes our family.
Right.
And then the guest becomes, mom or dad. We just want to make people happy, and food is a way to do that, right away, instantly.
And when you're working that type of lifestyle, and you know, you go from New York, I think you went to Atlanta, opened restaurants there, and that type of lifestyle is you're working till midnight, 1 a.m. You grab a pizza, have some beer.
Yes,
all of a sudden, you as an athlete, your body is a little different and not quite the one you want to see in the mirror.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, once I became like a chef, I mean, yeah, it's you're on your feet all day, but you're in, you know, a 5-foot space just twirling around in a circle. And you're tasting food all day.
Tasting food, yes.
You sort of lose grip with time. And yeah, and then you get off of work at 2 a.m. And for me, you know, you eat a whole pizza, a half a bottle of wine, and you do that, you know, 3 or 4 months in a row.
And then go right to bed.
And go right to bed. And then wake up and do it again. And so, yeah, I put on, I ended up, you know, I mean, I've lost about 60, 78 pounds.
What turned it around for you?
For me, what turned it around was this, you know, really this moment where I met my wife. So I was courting my wife. That's
Jasmine.
Amazing. Jasmine, right?
Yeah.
She was a personal trainer. She's always been in amazing shape. She's a big-time college athlete. And I was, you know, just a chubby chef trying to get the girl. At the same time, though, I was losing my restaurant. I was like, my first business was failing. My name was on the door. It was a restaurant.
Was this in Atlanta?
It was in Atlanta. Yeah. The restaurant was called Blaze. It was critically acclaimed and everyone was writing about it nationally. But I was a horrible business person. I just, you know, I was an artist at the time. So I had these two crazy things happening to me and I sort of needed that emotional moment of good and bad to sort of draw me out.
And so she said, listen, we got to change your lifestyle.
You know, I don't think
or
she ever
you
like, yeah,
made that
she
decision.
Didn't never put me to task. She does now. again, it was just like, we're hanging out. Let's go for a run. So she just was a little bit more active than I was at the time, of course. And I ended up basically, you know, running with her. And at the end of the first 10K that we trained for, I remember that it was a Peachtree Road Race.
Yes.
And at the end of the 10K.
4th of July.
There you go, 4th of July. We ran it every year for a long time. And then I proposed at the end of our first
The first time.
Road. Yeah, first time we ran together. We
and
trained.
That was your first race.
First race, yeah.
First race, and you propose.
Yeah, I just went big right off the bat.
Dive in, baby. What the heck?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, fortunately, she said yes.
She did say yes, which is good. You know, you catch someone at the end of a race, that moment where
that
your
weakness.
Mind is weakness.
Got it. Good move.
It's a really good move on my part. That's the smartest thing I've done, for sure.
She was in a damaged state, and I was like, what? Oh, sure, yeah. That sounds good.
That's it.
Like that. So from Atlanta, what brought you to San Diego?
So, you know, again, television started happening for me.
Yes.
And, you know, went on Top Chef, Iron Chef, all these things, ended up winning Top Chef eventually. And then I met my business partner here in San Diego, Mike Rosen, who was kind enough to bring me out. We were actually moving to Northern California because we kind of love the climate up there and the terroir and all these things chefs say.
Oh, and that's certainly
and
a
then,
restaurant.
But my arm was and my arm was twisted ever so gently to come down to Southern California, and we've been here since.
And in terms of Top Chef changing your life,
yeah,
how impactful was that?
I think even as we connected to the marathon, you know, when I won Top Chef is when I ran my first New York City marathon. And it just was this moment where I was like, hey, I can do anything I want if you put your mind to it. You know, this is one of these clarity moments. And that's when I ran my first New York City marathon. I said, hey, listen, let's go do some things that we've never tried to do before because, you know, you can. If you put in the work, you can do these things.
So part of that, you ran first New York, ran 4:31, which is awesome. Right?
Yeah, you know, the times descend. They get worse and worse each and every year. So we can spoiler alert.
The Global Education Organization Return to Read. When did you connect with that organization?
Yeah,
why is that important to you?
I mean, I've been, again, one of the great things that has happened from being, you know, some sort of celebrity somewhere on the letter list, somewhere around Y to Z, I think, is that, you know, especially for things like the marathon, I get to link up with amazing organizations and charities. Room to Read is one that just is perfect for me. They are promoting literacy and primary education, specifically with young girls. I have two daughters here in California, and you know, they sort of are lucky enough to have got a great ticket in the lottery of life.
Yes.
Not every kid internationally is.
No.
So, you know, we're talking about, you know, 250 million kids, you know, who need help, you know, with literacy, and Room to Read sort of provides books and teachers and libraries and resources to sort of, you know, help out with global education.
So when you ran that first marathon, how much training did you do for that thing?
You know, the first one, I think you go a little hard, right? As you probably are aware.
Yeah.
And, you know, I trained, you know, because I didn't know what I was up against. And I would get up at 3 in the morning. I had these runner's high moments. I remember one time, this is going to make me sound really silly, but I had this, like, vision that I turned into a lion. Like, I actually found my spirit animal on one of these, like, you know, 15-mile runs at 3 in the morning. You're totally here.
Okay, absolutely. Right. Nice. Yeah.
No one believes that story except for you, so this is good. So we're kindred spirits.
We always can compare spirit animals.
There you go. Exactly. And so I went pretty hard. That being said, I had no idea, like, what an actual race was.
Yes.
And my first marathon, I cramped, I remember, at like 16 miles, and like I couldn't barely walk the next day. I wouldn't say it was a great experience because I finished.
Right.
But it was a rough go for sure.
Yeah. And the fascinating part is, like you said, your first race was Peachtree, which is about 1 million participants.
Yeah.
So, and then you go to New York, which is 50,000. I mean, it's like you knew there's going to be crowds, there's going to be people around you the whole time. For a lot of people, they do their training by themselves. They go to a race and like, oh my God, who are all these people?
Right.
Why are they
so
here?
Even that though, like, I mean, getting prepared for the race, as you know, I should use you as a consultant more often, quite honestly. Like, you're not prepared for that. So you get jacked up. And like, I made that mistake at least in a couple marathons where,
yes,
you know,
go off with other people who are running faster.
As a matter of fact, I ran with another chef. His name's Nate Appleman, and he was a Marine, and he's an amazing little athlete. Well, I say little, he's just a little shorter than me, but he's an amazing athlete. And I remember I ran with him that first race, and he's quick. And I was like, I'm going to stay with him.
Sure,
and
why not?
He's a little, it was hard to find, right? And then I was like, I ran, you know, 5 miles easily just trying to basically catch Nate. And it was a horrible strategy because I was gassed, you know, halfway through.
Now you got 21 miles to go.
Exactly.
Nice. When you look at the proliferation of all the cooking shows that are out there now, right? And so many of them are based on, it's not sweet enough, it's not salty enough, and you know, from turning your lifestyle around, so much of it is nutrition.
Yeah.
How important is it for people who are watching these shows to get, okay, these are treat meals, but there's also the nutrition side of this?
Yeah. I mean, you know, not many people know. I hosted a cooking show called Cook Your Ass Off.
I don't know if I can say that. Yeah,
okay. Cook Your Ass Off a couple years ago, actually. And, you know, obviously no one knows about it because it didn't do too well. But that was much more nutrition sort of based. You know, at the end of the day, you know, chefs, we have this massive responsibility. Like, we're doing something, we're creating a product that people put in their bodies.
Yes.
Sometimes we forget that as chefs, right?
Right, yeah.
And not just from the nutrition, but food safety and everything from every sort of angle. So, you know, of course, on a television show, most of them, it's just about deliciousness. But I do feel like it's important for every chef to sort of have that responsibility to know, you know, that you shouldn't just be, you know, over generous with salt, sugar, fat, whatever it is.
Nutrition-wise for you, what did you do to turn it around and lose 60 pounds?
You know, I mean, most of it was really just dialing back these horrible habits, right? So, you know, eating pizza at 2 in the morning.
Right.
Got to cut it out.
Isn't it funny how little things?
Little things.
Pizza's a big thing, but still, it's that mentality of it's 2 in the morning, I can't have that.
And to be clear, it wasn't just pizza.
No.
It was everything at 2 in the morning. You know, I'm certainly, you know, again, just being a chef and, you know, having a glass of wine in your hand all the time, or, you know, cheer, you know, celebrating with your guests all the time. So, you know, cut down alcohol intake tremendously. And then it was, you know, more vegetables, lots of grains,
right,
you know, lean protein, but nothing like, you know, like no switch, just like really moderating everything.
So your first book was James Beard nominated, right?
Yes.
And your new book, So Good, 100 Recipes from My Kitchen to Yours.
Yes.
That came out in May.
Came out in May.
And great recipes in here.
I think, you know, listen, the both books, one, you said the first one, Try This at Home, was James Beard nominated.
Yes.
If anyone ever tells you their thing was nominated, it also means they didn't win.
But still, nominated
second,
is good.
Yeah, the second, so the first one is really a getting to know you book, and obviously it did pretty well. The second book here, So Good, is a great cookbook. Right?
Yes.
So there's a difference. And I feel like this is one someone could buy today. And, you know, I'm on the cover there with spaghetti and meatballs, and you can jump in and cook through it.
You know, what I learned from my transformation when I went from, you know, 181 to 164,
right,
from 24% body fat to 16.
Wow.
It was all, I didn't change my workouts at all. It was all nutrition. My wife started cooking with almond flour and coconut milk and made just a huge difference. No bread, butter, sugar, salt, all that type of stuff was out.
Exactly.
But it never became, oh my God, I'm missing that stuff, because it was all replaced with, you know, almond flour and coconut milk. So it seems that for people out there, there are options that can keep them healthy without feeling like, oh my God, I'm missing so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is little things, right? And it's not every meal. You know, I think that's what you're saying. It's just these little changes.
Yes.
You know, there are a lot of things, you know, I mean, I think out here in California, we're a little bit blessed. Like, we have all of these, you know, restaurants that are devoted to healthy grains, or we have, you know, all of these smoothie slash juice shops. You know what, though? That doesn't exist everywhere in the country.
We sort of think it does.
Right,
it doesn't.
Do. And it's like, that's just us being, you know, silly elitist Californians. But like, in the middle of the country, it's hard to find sometimes a place that'll just, you know, juice beets. I mean, recently, because I drink a lot of beet juice before a race.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure why. You probably know more than I think. It helps out with the blood. And
it's good. Yeah.
So that's something I've done the last couple of years, and it kind of works. So it's now.
Keep doing it.
Keep doing it. But it's hard to find sometimes that simple nutrition. Get a juicer. Eat lots of vegetables.
So podcast, Starving for Attention.
Yes, Starving for Attention. I was in studio yesterday doing a couple episodes up in L.A. And, you know, that's been fun, being on the other side of the microphone.
Cool, huh?
And we just bring in different people in the food world, or, you know, everyone has a connection to food.
Right.
So really, we bring in lots of different people, but mostly focused on food television. So people that are in the food world, but are also, you know, cooking on television or in front of a camera. And that's been a lot of fun. Subscribe to that because it's free. I don't feel bad about asking people
to
subscribe
to
a podcast.
And also, new TV show?
We have a couple new things out. Yeah, so we do have a show that's in the can called Man vs. Master.
Yes.
I'm not sure when that's going to air, to be honest with you, so not much to report on that. And, of course, you know, Food Network and Top Chef Juniors and all sorts of little appearances. I'm heading out tomorrow for the New York Marathon.
Yes.
I'll do a couple episodes of the Rachel Ray Show. And so we stay busy in front of a camera as well.
So now that you've run this thing, and this will be your fifth, what have you learned from this event that you'll take into this one?
Wow. I mean, for me, I think just knowing the course,
yeah,
you know, is so important. When I talk about that first marathon where I wasn't prepared for the wall, where
right.
I wasn't prepared for bridges, where I did no research on elevation, for me, having that map is crucial. And,
yep.
And now that it's my fifth New York, I kind of know without doing too much research, hey, the Bronx is where the wall happens. The biggest elevation's on the Verrazano Bridge and the Queensboro Bridge. Be careful about, you know, First Avenue, I think it is,
yes.
where it's a pretty big, long 4 or 5 mile up, you know, uphill.
Yep.
And, you know, also the crowd size. You know, for me, one of the things that is tough is I wear a bib with my name on it because of the celebrity angle. It's good and bad because a lot of people
can't hide.
No, this is so true. So for me, again, I train by myself.
Yeah.
And I'm out in a canyon or on the beach, whatever it is. And like, I need to hide sometimes.
Yes.
And the only way to hide in a big race like that is in the middle of the road,
yes.
which is tough.
Yeah, with all sorts of people around you and try to be in a little cocoon, right?
Yeah. One of my favorite stories about the race
yes.
is that, you know, if you've heard of, I'm sure, of like Team Achilles.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're running with, you know, sometimes blind
prosthetics,
runners.
And, oh, my
gosh. It's amazing that they run. One of my biggest joys of the marathon is because I have my name on my bib, usually Team Achilles gets to run by me a number of times during the race, and they'll
Humble.
Run by and tell their if it's like blind runners, for example, they're like, "You're running by Richard Blaze from Top Chef. Go, you're doing great." Like, I'm inspiration for these runners.
You're basically a power dot.
Exactly, I'm playing
a little Pac-Man, and you're hey, that's great.
It's amazing to sort of, you know, be able to be that fuel for someone as well.
So marathons, and have you given any thought to really coming to the dark side and starting to shave the legs and go a little triathlon on
try.
Us?
Well, first of all. Here's an inside tip. I already shaved my legs.
Oh.
So that's something I'm already
for a massage
in.
Or for
you know, I wrestled in high school. I mentioned
that. That's true.
So
yes.
like, you know, the whole pain threshold. And,
yeah.
You know. So that's I'm already there with you.
Wow. That's really a tough move for a lot of people.
Yeah, not for me.
Yeah.
You know, if someone is trying to get me to do a charity bike ride of
there you go.
3 days, 300 miles.
Yeah.
That a bunch of chefs do.
Yes.
Up in Northern California in the spring.
Right.
So I think I'm going to do that.
Yes.
So the swimming is the last part of it, which seems pretty gnarly to me. So I don't know. What do I need to get?
You jump into a master. You're here in San Diego.
Yeah.
We've got pools all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Get in a program, a master swim program.
Right.
And, you know, at a JCC, a YMCA, and having somebody work with your stroke. Because swimming is so technique is everything.
Right.
And you will, you know, I started out in the truck lane with the pregnant women and moved up. You know, you move up over time. And
right.
before you know it, it's the easiest sport to get good at. You'll get competent at swimming very quickly.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah. Especially with the engine you've already developed from cycling and running.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, good. Well, that makes me feel a little bit better.
Yes.
But you got to put in some time for a trial.
Yeah. But what's nice about it is just you're already used to 3 a.m. You know, you get up a little early and you go to the swim pool. And what's great about 20 minute swim. you get a lot done in 20 minutes.
That's true.
Before you know it, boom, you're there. So where do you train when you're in San Diego?
You know, here's the thing. I travel so much.
Yes.
I'm running wherever I can.
Which is great. Yeah. You just bring shoes with. It's so easy.
It is. And that's like, to me, I don't really have the time for an actual like serious scheduled format. So
right.
It's like I land in a city, I throw on my sneakers, and I run. And whatever that is, I don't get too obsessed with it. It's 2, 5, 10 miles, whatever I can put in. I've been doing a lot of, it's just probably not good because I travel so much, like multiple runs during a day.
Wow.
But I don't know, you're going pro on us. Is it? Okay.
I'm
just doing it because I know I need to pack on the miles and just sort of get the stamina there.
But double runs.
Well, if I'm on my own on the
way to go, Meb.
Nice.
I like that.
Isn't it bad though? I thought I've heard.
No.
I heard that's an archaic sort of.
If you're injured, then it's bad. But if you're feeling okay, that's okay. Because a lot of people will do a hard run in the morning, and they might do an easier run in the afternoon.
Exactly.
That type of thing.
That's kind of what I've been doing.
Yeah. So Juniper and Ivy. Crack Shack.
Yes, Juniper and Ivy Crack Shack. So our local restaurants here in San Diego. And Crack Shack is getting ready to open up our third location in Costa Mesa in Orange County.
Chicken-based?
Chicken and eggs. Yeah, so fried chicken, of course, which is, you know, maybe post-race meal.
Yes, absolutely.
And then, of course, we have chicken sandwiches and salads and lots of delicious snacks, full wine and cocktail list. And Orange County is next in 2 weeks, and then we'll be up in L.A. for the next couple of locations.
How many different restaurants are you involved with now?
You know, different partnerships with different things. And, you know, based here in Southern California, and this is sort of our, you know, headquarters. So Juniper and Ivy, the Crack Shacks. I did just sign a little growth seed deal with Chipotle for a fast food hamburger restaurant called Tasty Mate. That's in Lancaster, Ohio. And that's really it as far as restaurants at the moment. But, you know, we're always sort of looking towards growth in every which way.
So when people come to you and say, gosh, you're a celebrity chef and I want to get into that business, you can say, listen, I was cooking fish at McDonald's.
Oh,
come
yeah. I mean, I do think that's, you know, one of the slightly negative things about all the television stuff is you have people who want to cook just to be on TV.
Right.
Nothing wrong with wanting to be on TV or be a celebrity. That's a great goal to have. But, you know, there are some dues you do have to pay.
Yes, you do.
And for me, it was, you know, 10 years, you know, behind the wall without anyone seeing me just cooking.
Learning.
You know, delicious food.
Learning it all.
Yeah. Which is good because it makes me feel like I have integrity. Whether or not that's true, I'm not sure. But it makes me feel like I am a restaurant chef. I'm also a television chef and I do both of those. Things.
Love that. And again, the charity is roomtoread.org. You'll be running for them this weekend, New York City Marathon. Your fifth one.
My fifth one, running for Room to Read. Check them out on social. Go over to their website. It's a pretty amazing organization. And, you know, to know that I'm running for millions of children worldwide is a pretty big responsibility. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Well, and that connects with your daughters, mm-hmm. right? That's the fact that your daughters have everything they need. But a lot of these other kids don't have education.
Exactly. It helps when you need it at 21 miles there.
Yeah, it does. You need that something else to draw on because it's a very selfish sport. And with being able to draw on something and knowing you're doing it, there's a bigger purpose.
Absolutely.
Love it. Richard, thanks so much for
taking time. Thank you. We'll do it again. How about that?
I would be honored.
Yes.
We'll talk after the marathon.
Yes.
Yeah, while you're still cramping and before you shave your legs for the next one.
Ooh, there we go.
And before you sign up for your first triathlon.
I'm going to just go shave my legs now.
I would go shave your legs now. Richard Blaze has been our guest again, roomtoread.org. He'll be running the New York City Marathon for the fifth time this weekend. Very cool. Yeah, just with a few of his friends, about 49,999 other people from all over the world.
There you go.
I love it. Richard Blaze has been our guest again. We are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, RunCatalina.com, VeloFix, the coolest mobile bike shop around, ATV Swim Spas, the official training vessel for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott, and our Challenge Athletes Foundation. We just sent out 1,443 grants totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Hold on, everybody. We will be right back.